We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Subscribers to New Orleans Football get access to all of our news and analysis, our members only podcast, extra video features, and so much more. Make sure you sign up today, NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. Welcome back to another episode of New Orleans Football presented by PJ's Coffee. We are coming to you from our new studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard, right next to Matt Bowers. If you need a new Ford, make sure you go check them out. But if you want any type of car, make sure you check out all their different types of dealerships. They have pretty much every single car brand, best prices, best customer care, best of everything. So make sure you go and check them out today for your new or new used car. And yeah, we got a great show for you guys today. We got a lot of stuff we're going to get into. State of the Saints, we're going to run through a bracket, the Elite Eight of things that could take down the Saints this season. We're going to hit that and so much more after this quick word from our great sponsors. The New Orleans Football Show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86 proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company has a great new engagement salon. They got rings of all sizes, all price ranges. So if you're looking to ask someone to spend the rest of life with you, make sure you go and check them out first. They will get you right and get you onto the path to success. And if you're lacking a little bit, the nice ring might help. So make sure you get that ring. While you're there, make sure you check out their Florida Lead necklace and earrings that you see on the screen now. The earrings are priced at $1,100. The necklace is $1,350. All right, let's get into our Elite Eight of the things that will make or break the Saints season.
Yeah, you said eight things that'll take the Saints down. Some of these things could lift the Saints up.
They might. There's not a lot of positivity in the fan base right now. That's just kind of where things are at. But yeah, look, man, there's a lot of things that I think are pretty interesting as far as these different areas where they could go. And we're going to go through them. We're going to pick them and we're going to take it just kind of right down the bracket. Yeah.
We'll start in the what? The Metairie region?
You want to start in the Metairie region? Where's that? We going with the new offense versus the new run defense, the make or break bracket here. The new offense, obviously, you got Clint Kubiak. The run defense is not where it should be right now. If the new offense is, I don't know, the run defense, so like we're going to call that We're going to call that Duke. That's Duke versus NC State here. Which way are you going?
You got the new offenses, NC State?
That big man is balling, man.
I feel like the run defense.
Looks
I
like
almost,
Brandon Thomas.
I would almost. They want the big man in their run defense, man.
Thomas, but lighter on his feet. Brandon ain't that light on his feet.
I think the new offense is the one seed here, and the run defense would be the upset. But the run defense is sort of like the hidden thing that they just haven't gotten better, and they haven't really done anything major to fix it. Unless they add a draft pick or a June 1st or April, you know, whatever you want to say, May 1st free agent signing. But I also don't think the run defense is nearly as important. I mean, I think the new offense is the obvious choice here. We're going to agree on these. This is going to be collaborative. But this is the make or break part. I mean, this is the one area where we kind of have hope for this team, where there's actually room for major improvement, especially with what we saw at the end of Derek Carr last year. We love the Clint Kubiak hire. We love that they brought in John Benton, Rico, Rick Dennison, the veteran guys who could fix this offensive line run game. I think the new offense is the number one reason for new hope on this team. Isn't that one of the biggest make or break factors in this whole team this year?
Yeah, we really kind of got like the one seed versus the 16 here, because, you know, the run defense is what it is. And if the new offense is good, that takes something off the run defense. So that helps a little bit, too. I think I'm going to move ahead just easily here with the new offense. I feel good about it. I feel good about the direction they're going. This is hope versus pessimism. I'm going to go with hope on this one, I think.
How much could – I agree. So Brandon can start typing new offense into round two, but just real quick, how much could a bad run defense sink this team? If they don't get that fixed, do they miss the playoffs again, or can they survive a poor run defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially if they keep Marshawn, you want to be stopping the run, force teams to pass. You don't want them even considering running on, like, third and fourth or whatever. Like, and we saw that at times last year. So it's definitely better if they're in that situation. So, yeah, if they can't stop the run, I think it does cost them a game somewhere. The net collaborative effect of it at some point, I think, does cost you a game. Because if teams are running on you like that, too, the other thing that plays into that is the pass rush. Like, you don't have good pass rush or anything too. So like, you're kind of, everything kind of plays together into that. So I think you're failing in multiple places if your run defense is as poor as it was last season. So I think that's just kind of like a net cumulative effect there. So yeah, they definitely, no. If the run defense is bad, they aren't making the playoffs.
We mentioned the other day that signing Willie Gay Jr. should hopefully help with the way quarterbacks have been running all over them, especially last year, the last couple years. But I agree, this belongs in the Elite Eight, but it doesn't move into the Final Four.
Absolutely. All right, moving down on that side of the bracket, the offensive line versus the pass catchers.
I think offensive line has a chance to win this thing. So I'm going to put that ahead of pass catchers. I mean, look, I'm really confident in Chris Olave. I'm really confident in Rashid Shaheed. We're excited to see what A.T. Perry could do. Cedric Wilson was a nice signing. I think we think they're still going to add one more player, whether it's a tight end or a draft pick maybe in the receiver group. Juwan Johnson can only be better. I feel pretty good about the pass catchers. I'd like to see them take a step forward, but I don't think they're going to be like the run defense. I don't think pass catchers is a weakness. The offensive line is the big screaming, you know, the fire is coming, and it's kind of out of control right now. They need to add talent. They need to coach it better. They need the guys that they have to be healthier and play better. I think offensive line has a chance to win this whole thing.
Here's the thing. You could add, like, Justin Jefferson to the pass catcher mix, and it wouldn't matter if they don't have starting caliber offensive tackles. And right now they need
two. I'd like to see. Well, I'd like to try it.
He ain't getting on the field very far, but you know, you got to be able to block just to take advantage of those guys. You aren't gonna be able to take full advantage of them if you can't block. Now I do kind of think that there very likely could be an agreement with someone to where maybe, hey, like, we'll hit you up after the draft, like, because that's when that no longer factors into the comp pick formula after the draft. And we've seen, yes, Tyron sign then, we saw Jameis sign then, we saw Jarvis Landry sign after that date. There's sometimes these agreements in place, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Avante Maddox join the team after then, yep, too. Very early visit, kind of disappears. I kind of feel like he's coming back, and it was just kind of like, hey, we're going to do this, but we aren't going to execute it until then, or we'll revisit it then. I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, Mekhi Becton be one of them guys. It feels like there has to be something in the works right now with what they know.
Okay, so Mekhi Becton comes in or Andres Pete comes in, whether or not they draft a guy on in round one. But, I mean, they're still not saviors. I mean, it helps a little, but man, I still want that round one pick. I
think you still make a round one pick, but you need two.
Yeah.
I think you cover one because it's going to be really hard to cover two in the draft. And then counting on pick 45 to be a starter is a long shot. So I just feel like there has to be something in the works. I don't know. We've watched them operate for too long to believe that that's kind of just, there's
nothing.
Yeah,
I guess
there.
The only thing that would stop them from signing a guy like that is if they end up drafting two guys in the first 100 picks or something like that. Even then they might still need the veteran. We'll talk more about the offensive line in a minute, though, because they have made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, they're making it further than the Final Four. All right, round one on the other side. Dennis Allen versus the secondary.
Secondary is interesting because it includes Marshawn Lattimore. The fact that we still don't know for sure if Marshawn Lattimore is on this team, you could make a case for Marshawn Lattimore being available versus Marshawn Lattimore being traded as being as important as anything we're talking about today. But I'm still going to go with Dennis Allen. I mean, I don't know how many wins difference Dennis Allen can make strictly by like learning how to be a better head coach, by being able to reach the guys more, motivate the guys more. I mean, the fact that he hired Clint Kubiak already and you know, the staff changes he made on offense, he's already done part of what he needed to do this year. He has some things as the defensive coordinator, the de facto defensive coordinator for this team, that he's not got to clean up, including the run defense. And he's got to get these guys on board after, you know, I mean, the buy-in, I think it's gotten harder each year that they've missed the playoffs for him to sell that buy-in to the players in the locker room. So I think he's got an incredible job. He's got an impossible job with the fan base. The fan base is already out on him, it feels like. I don't know that it's as dire inside the building. I know it's not as dire inside the building with the decision makers on top, but just a huge, huge year for him. He has to do it as a head coach. He has to do it as the defensive coordinator of this team. But I don't want to overlook the importance of the secondary could be a make the team, like we were talking about the new offense, the optimistic. If they get Marshawn Lattimore back and they've got Paulson Adebo and they've got Alante Taylor taking a step forward and they've got Jordan Howden taking a step forward, it could be a strength of the team. But I'm leaning toward Dennis Allen in this matchup.
I'm going secondary here.
Okay.
And I think the secondary could make or break the team. If Marshawn's not part of it and they're poor, like, that's something that breaks it. If Marshawn's here, it makes it. So I think it kind of covers it on both sides. I understand the frustration with DA and I understand the pessimism around him and everything, but ultimately he's 17-18 as the head coach of the Saints. He's fine. Like, there's a lot of people that aren't good coaches that end up with like good quarterbacks or whatever, and they get carried by it. Like, I don't think he's a bad coach. I think he's great at his side of the ball. I think that there's things that he probably would tell you he could do better leading the overall room and everything. So I'm not trying to make a case for him like as a reason for anything. I'm just saying that I think that some of this stuff is a little bit overblown at times with the conversation in terms of, like, you know, he's the worst coach in team history. No, I saw someone saying the other day, like, come on, he's 500. He's a definition of average. And I think if you give him some things around him, it elevates him a little bit. So, look, but everything is kind of to his making. He brought in Derek Carr. He brought in a lot of different stuff. So, to me, I'm going, but I think it's secondary here. I think the secondary could drown him, and I think that it could elevate him. So, with that one kind of going both ways, I feel like that's kind of a bigger story. And to me, like, DA is just kind of a fixed asset at this point. So, it's kind of like, it's just,
I do,
like,
agree with that concept. We're not saying that Dennis Allen is great, and, you know, that he hasn't done a poor job or anything like that. But fixed asset is the right word. I don't think there's as much wiggle room with how much better DA can be or how much worse DA can be. There's a ton of wiggle room in how much this secondary can become an elite NFL secondary or a problem that kind of, what, you loosen one string and the whole thing falls apart if the secondary isn't strong for this team. So I do agree with the secondary having more variance that will make or break this team.
Yeah, look, I don't want to be out here like it's like I'm you know, rallying behind DA or anything either. I just think the conversation's gotten a little bit out of control.
Yeah, you're
a
right.
little bit. It's just kind of like he's just kind of been fine. Like, it's just, but like, fine took a while to get there. I think this year's make or break for him, though, and I think he could absolutely coach's way out of the building too. Like, I think there's a lot riding on this season. I think expectations haven't been met. I think there's a lot of stuff there, but the fact that, like, every time I go on Twitter, it's just like he's the worst coach to ever live, and it's like he's 500 in this situation. So I think it just should be had in that context, but I don't think 500 is acceptable either. But I also think that, and I include myself in this, like, I think we've overrated the roster at times too, and I think I definitely did that last year. I definitely thought they had more on the team than they did last year, and that kind of elevated expectations. Having said that, they came one game shy of meeting kind of the baseline expectation of everything. So I don't know, man. It just feels like it's gotten a little bit wacky just in terms of how far that conversation has gone. But I understand him being on the hot seat and all that, sure. and he should be.
Yeah, just like the run defense, he definitely belongs in the Elite Eight conversation. But, yeah, just more variance in the secondary, I think.
All right, Derek Carr versus the pass rush.
For the same thing, it's hard to call Derek Carr a known asset, but because things were so much worse than we expected early last season, and then even better than I think people realized late last season. We've mentioned a bunch of times on here that over the last 6 weeks of the season, he had 15 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and the best passer rating of any full-time quarterback in the league over that stretch. But he's starting over in a new system, so we don't know exactly how he's going to take to that. But I don't think Derek Carr is going to turn into a top five quarterback, and I don't think he's going to turn into a bottom five quarterback. I don't think there's a lot of variance there. The pass rush, on the other hand, tons of it. We're talking make or break the season. If Chase Young delivers, if Peyton Turner delivers, if Isaiah Foskey delivers, if Cam Jordan's healthy and plays better than he played last year, if they draft a guy early, if they still add another guy, there's so much more. This pass rush could be better. Or the bottom could drop out on this pass rush if none of those things happen. So along those lines of what could make or break the team, and the fact that, you know, the pass rush makes everything go, it makes the secondary better, it puts pressure on quarterbacks. I feel like similar conversation we just had, pass rush is going to beat Derek Carr for that reason.
Yeah, and look, I think the only variance, well, not the only variance, but the major variance with Carr, I think, is tied to the offensive line, which we have in round two.
And tied to the new offense, which we also have going.
Like, he can be fine, you know, if everything works out. But if the O-line stinks, there is a reality where he could be bottom five because they can't block for him. But that wouldn't be because of him. Like, it'd be because the O-line is failing. So if we're gonna use the same criteria we use at the top half of this bracket, we should use it at the bottom. And I agree with you. Pass rush goes through for me.
All right. Just out of curiosity, does Derek Carr, sum total, have a better season this year or leave a more favorable impression of the fan base than he did last year, you think? You think a better year this year than last year?
If they can block a little bit, I think a better year than last year for sure. But if they can't block, he's probably hurt again. He's probably having another terrible season. DA's probably, you know, very, very much in a flaming hot seat at that point. And I think everything kind of goes down very, very quickly if they can't block. So there is so much riding on that, and we're kind of having the conversation right now, so let's flip it over to round two, other side, the Metairie side of the bracket, I guess. New offense versus offensive line. For me, it's the O-line going through. I think it's just such a critical thing, and when you look at it and you have no starting offensive tackles, I don't know that this team, this factor can be beat in this tournament. I think it's absolutely all the way through to the championship, and
yeah, this is
we're going to keep talking about it. But
this
is
the semantic side of the bracket, because this is kind of confusing. And I picked the category, so I blame myself. I guess offensive line, I'm thinking a little bit more personnel. Like, are they going to get the right guys? And are the guys they have, you know, will Trevor Penning pan out? Will Ryan Ramczyk play? Will they draft a guy in round one? Will Nick Saldivari pan out? I'm kind of putting all that in the offensive line. The new offense, I'm including Rick Dennison and John Benton and Clint Kubiak installing the right run game, that you're giving them a mediocre offensive line. Can they still make the run game work? Can they design an offense where Derek Carr can get rid of the ball quickly? Can they overcome mediocre talent on the offensive line and make a productive offense out of what they have to work with? For that reason, I'm kind of leaning toward new offense and everything it entails. I mean, can they get the most out of Carr? Can they get most out of their offensive line talent? Can they get the most out of Olave? Can they get more out of Alvin Kamara? Can they get more out of Kendre Miller? Like, I'm kind of leaning toward that, but I don't disagree that the thing that will derail it all is if the offensive line is just plain terrible.
The flip side of that, though, is they had a top 10 offense last year. So
didn't feel like it, but yeah.
Like how much more, you know, if they get more out of it, okay. But I don't even know if you can get more out of it if you can't block. So it comes back. I think the blocking, I don't think it matters if you have a system if you can't block. Like I'm kind of like if we both get a trump card here, like I am throwing it down on this one and pushing the offensive line through, because like I feel like it's just such a critical thing. I think it influences the draft. I think it's going to influence our ability to get like other people that they could use for that new offense, because now you got Ramczyk out, which was an unplanned absence. Like I think it just kind of just pales over everything, and I don't think it matters what plays you call for your quarterback or your run game if you can't block.
Let me ask you this. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm trying to figure it out as we go, because I think the winner of this game is going to win the entire thing. But would you rather, if somehow you could quantify this, would you rather have a just basic, average, fine, Dennis Allen level, 18 and 17 and 18 level offensive system, and above average talent on the offensive line, or perfectly average, fine, 500 level talent on the offensive line, but one of the better? You would rather have Kyle Shanahan and mediocre talent, or, you know, great offensive line talent and mediocre coaching?
Well, here's the thing. You can look at this system around the league, and there's a lot of mediocre offensive lines that have looked good because of this system. So if you get the mediocre, I think that the system elevates it, but I don't think the system can elevate
worse than mediocre.
Yeah, worse than mediocre. So yeah. I guess the way I'm
looking at offensive line would not be number one if they just had their offensive line even from 2 years ago. It's in dire
just
straits
average,
right now.
Yeah, just average guys. But I think the thing is for me, like I'm looking at this, and it's like one's a battle to 500, and if you don't get there, you're below 500, and everything breaks down. And then I think the other one kind of lifts you from that 500 point. So it's like you got to have one to get to the other. But I think this team's like battling a standard right now of like that 500 mark, and you don't want to be below it again. And I think if you go below it, things fall apart. So I'm just trying to get to like a baseline of confidence.
Offensive line is what could make this team. A lot of fans have been predicting 6 wins, 4 wins, disaster. They have never gotten there. The offensive line is what could actually bring them down.
So there's a single point here. Like I don't think the new offense can lift everything on its own, but the offensive
line
can
make
drag everything down on its own. Exactly. So
I agree. I just think offensive it carries line. A little bit offensive away. Line is what could derail everything. Yeah, to use an old Sean Payton line when he once described Josh Hill as the front door, I think that's an even more apt description for the offensive line. They're literally the front door to everything else. And if you don't have your front door, it's all over. So offensive line has made the championship bracket.
I think either way, we're going to see a lot of quarterback movement to try to protect
quick passes, get rid of that ball,
man. The first game of the COVID season, the Vegas game where they ran like all them bootlegs to Waller, like just go steal those, like you might need them.
Derek Carr tore the Saints up doing that.
All right,
this one's easy, right? Secondary versus pass rush. It's the pass rush.
Yeah
We've already discussed them. Rewind if you didn't listen to the discussion, but it's pass rush in the championship versus the offensive line for sure
now.
What if they went against each other? Man. Let's just let them line up. Versus bad. The movable object versus the resistible force.
Oh man, we got the offensive line versus the pass rush.
I think this is going to be a pretty easy one. The pass rush could get better. The pass rush, like I said, Chase Young could be a revelation. God knows if Peyton Turner or Isaiah Foskey could be better. But if they're all if they don't live up to expectations, if they're what they were last year, there's enough guys. There's Cam Jordan. There's Carl Granderson. There's Tano Passanio. We think they'll add one more guy to this. If they all just perform, I don't think this team necessarily gets worse. I think, as we just discussed, the offensive line could just crater. I mean, the offensive line on its baseline might be worse to start with, and it could get way worse. I think the potential for disaster is greater on the offensive line. And hey, if they draft a guy in the first round and he's like an all rookie level stud at left tackle, there's room to get better too. There are young guys like Penning or Saldivari who could do something we don't expect. So there's room for growth in both. I think there's more room for collapse in the offensive line.
No arguments for me here. I think that, yeah, And look, the thing with the pass rush is you can manufacture rush other ways, even if they don't have a good D-line. Like, they'll still get their sacks because that's what Dennis Allen does. But the offensive line, if you can't block, you can't block. And there are things you can do to help with that a little bit. Be, you know, but it's just, I think at some point you have to be able to block. You got to rush the passer too, but like, you can send DeMario, you can send Alante, you can send, you know, Tyron on a blitz. Like, there's different things you can do. So I'm going with you. I think it's offensive line all the way here.
All right. Just to say something good about the offensive line, we think Eric McCoy had a really good year last year.
Great player.
Feel good about your center position. Cesar Ruiz is still never quite consistently tapped into his potential, but I've got him written in pen as my right guard on the team, and he's young and he's ascending, and hopefully this new coaching gets more out of him. So it's not like five question marks all the way across the offensive line, but the other three spots are major question marks right now. That is our champion. That is our first ever Saints Madness NOF bracket. Good work on the graphics. Offensive line will make or break this season.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think that's kind of the narrative right now. I think that's the way it should go. Like, I just don't think it's in a place where the things that we're trying to define the season with should be, like, positive things. I don't think they're there yet. So yeah. That's why, like, new offense doesn't get there. Pass catchers don't get there.
Offense probably ranks second for me in variance. We use the word variance a few times. Could be better, could be worse. A large discrepancy in between how good it be and how bad it could be. That probably finished second for me. It just, you know, got a tough draw in that bracket.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to our next segment, which is brought to you by Jouet Productions. If you need help with your podcast, make sure you hit them up. They'll get you right, get your sound right, get you the right visuals. Check them out. Jouer.productions is the website. Check them out. Hit them up. They'll get you right. All right. Today is April 1st, so it is now officially draft month. I watched Draft Day, the first half of it this
morning. Good work. Terrible movie.
And we may do this a few times in the coming weeks with different scenarios, but this one is inspired by last week's local pro day, which was held at the Saints facility. It's a pair of would you rathers. The first, would you rather the Saints wind up drafting Michael Penix Jr., the Heisman Trophy runner-up in round two, or Michael Pratt in round five? You might actually have to package two of those fifth rounders if you want to move up.
Yeah, I've seen some people putting Pratt in the fourth round. Maybe he gets to the end of the fifth round. Quarterbacks, you know, once the first wave passes. So, and look, Penix might not make it to round two. So we'll call it round two versus round five. We're saying, hey, they fell. The price is just too good. Penix would really excite me. I mean, they have much more glaring stop the bleeding needs. They need two starting offensive linemen. They need a pass rusher. They need a pass catcher. And Pratt would be exciting, too. I mean, there's some talent there, and you can do that in round five where you haven't used one of your primo chips. I'm really torn on this one, but I can't help it. I saw Penix's highs. I want something to be excited about. I'm taking Penix in round two.
Penix, for sure. I mean, that's somebody that could develop into being a starter. Pratt could probably be a backup somewhere for a little bit, but I'm big on
even if it's using that kind of precious second-round pick.
Yeah, if you like him, yeah, if you like him, yeah, do it. If your scouting says, yeah, he could be the starter at some point, absolutely. Like, taking a guy in the fifth, I like it. In the fourth, I like it. You roll the dice, maybe you get lucky. But if you really believe in it in the second, yeah, go for it. And they're in the position where I feel like you should be married to any quarterback anyhow. So using a premium asset on it, if you actually believe in it, and it's not just a roll of the dice there, even though I think drafting any quarterback is a major roll of the dice, yeah. Unless it's even...
Can they afford to roll that this year with the limited draft capital they have right now on either one of these scenarios?
No risk, no reward. So if you like either one of them and you feel better about the upsides and the downsides, yeah, I do it. I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I keep saying, and it's just harder to actually do it, and I'm sure it's true for the Saints and 31 other NFL teams too. I keep saying all their decisions should have the future in mind first and this year second. And they've actually done that this offseason. They have not wasted any money on any old guys who will only help, you know, put a Band-Aid on a situation for a year. Every one of their free agent spending decisions had some long-term possibilities, and every dollar they haven't spent is why waste it on 2024 alone. So this would be with an eye toward the future, and so I like it. But when it happened, I'd be like, well, great, they didn't get their offensive tackle. Now they're screwed this year. Yeah. I'm sure I'll feel that way in the moment if they do it.
Yeah, I'm kind of at a longer, and I've always been pro-draft a quarterback, but yeah. I think even more so now, like, I'm just kind of at a longer tail place with this team right now.
And it's
kind of like, if you can sell me on something that's going to help you 5 years from now, and as opposed to like right now, I'm willing to sacrifice this year for anything. I'm willing to sacrifice the whole entire, like you can go make any type of trade you want. If you go up and get a quarterback, like that's one trade up. Like I'll support.
Yeah. If they had CJ Stroud, nobody would care who the other 52 players on the team are. I don't know if anyone can name the other 52 players on Houston, but they know they wish they were Houston right now.
Yeah, well, if CJ Stroud immediately coming out of the draft, though, like everyone would have been pissed. Like, this isn't the guy. And then it's like, it is. So that's just sometimes how it goes. But yeah, I like it. I would definitely do it. All right, the next one. Would you rather Brian Thomas if he falls to round two or Jaquan Jackson in round five or six?
Well, obviously Jaquan, who has a chance, I think a chance to be the highest drafted New Orleans football analyst ever.
Definitely
you didn't get drafted, right?
No, I was a UDFA, but I proved him wrong.
So obviously Jaquan, we're going to be biased here, but I'm going to pick Jaquan either way. Brian Thomas Jr. falls to round two, you probably run in that card. A lot of people think, I just saw Matt Miller, kind of friend of the show, said only 18 players have a first round grade for him, and Brian Thomas was one of them. He's a bigger receiver. He kind of fills that void, but I really want to use those first two picks on the offensive line or the defensive line. We just went through the bracket and that was our finalists, offensive line versus pass rush. Receiver feels not like a luxury pick. It's a need, but a little bit of a luxury pick compared to how bad they need to fill those. So I'd rather add Jaquan Jackson, who obviously could also be a second returner, and we're going to talk about this after the break, that there's room for two return men with the new kickoff rules too. So I just like the value more of getting that receiver in round five instead of round two.
You know what? Give me both of them. Give me both of them. I'm not going to even pit them against each other. I like both of them. I like both their roles. I like the value of both in this exercise right here. So
yeah, I will not be complaining if they end up with Brian Thomas Jr. at pick 45.
We got one more, in the chat. Would you rather, and this is from Matt, appreciate the support, Matt, would you rather get a true left tackle or a guard tackle player in the first round?
Well, there is one. It's the Washington guy, Fatuanu, I believe, who the analysts are kind of torn. They say he could be an excellent left tackle or an excellent left guard, and bring him on. That would be perfectly fine with me, because if the coaches get their hands on him and they think he's going to be like an all-pro left guard, fine. That helps solve some of the problems too. You can have a lesser left tackle, or maybe that guy's great at left tackle. So I have no problem with that, but obviously the need is great enough at left tackle that I'm not choosing Fatuano, if I'm pronouncing that right, just for that reason, but I'm perfectly fine with either possibility.
For me, whoever I'm taking in the first round, I want to know for sure they're playing tackle. So if you have a slash on that, but you are sure about the tackle thing,
yeah,
cool. I don't care. But like, I'm drafting you to play tackle, like one of the tackle spots. But yeah, the slash part's great, and it's fine. If you have versatility, even better. And then if Penning hits and you sign a Becton and now you have three guys and you can move that guy inside, I mean, that's kind of a benefit, but I'm not building for that. Like, I just want to know
not
for
sure. Not choosing guard for his versatility,
at 14,
but that'd be a bonus.
I am drafting a tackle. Like, you have to for sure be a tackle. All right. That's going to do it for the first half of the show. We'll be right back after this short word from our great sponsors. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family-owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience. All right, our next segment is brought to you by Hard Hide Punch a Tool Strawberry Whiskey. We've heard some really interesting things from talking with sources inside and outside the Saints organization about how teams might approach the new kickoff role. At least one person suggested it could be treated more like an inside run drill, just very spread out. Another said it will become a lot more important for teams to match personnel groupings based on the size and speed and all the other factors. But by far, the most interesting wrinkle is that some believe it could lead to teams using star caliber players on kick returns now that it's safer and there will be so many more touches available, up to 5 or 6 per week. So how does this affect the Saints and what do we expect from them? Is it a path to more touches for Shahid? Could Alvin Kamara be out there? Taysom Hill? Chris Olave, Alante Taylor, Deontay Hardy coming back? Or do you look for the next Hardy or Shahid in the draft through their process of identifying those types of players? So how do you see it going?
It's all really exciting. And I mean, we were talking to someone. I asked, because I, you know, am always like, how do you get the ball in Taysom Hill's hands more? And I said, is this a path for possible more Taysom Hill touches? Because we always want more Taysom Hill touches. And I said, or back to the days where Kamara, remember he had the punt return touchdown as a rookie. And those are two names that have already been tossed around theoretically. I mean, obviously they haven't drawn anything up. This rule's only existed for a week, but that's the kind of stuff we're talking about here is guys like that, that we want to see in open space more, that we want to see get more touches, could realistically do it. And I think that's actually so possible that Deontay Hardy is probably not front of mind because they have players already on the roster they'd like to get those touches to. Obviously, it's going to mean more touches for Shahid, which is super exciting. And yeah, they're probably going to draft another guy. Maybe it's Jaquan Jackson, or maybe it's somebody from a college I've never heard of that they're signing as a UDFA because that's what they do so well. But I mean, this is, maybe this should have made its way onto the bracket. Can the Saints have a special teams advantage because they've got some really exciting guys who are going to be touching the ball a lot more now?
I wouldn't be against bringing Hardy back. And, you know, I'm a big Hardy believer. Like, I think he can do more as a receiver. I think he's great as a returner. And if you could, and look, it doesn't seem like he has a huge market, so you could probably bring him back pretty cheap. But if this is one of those things that you do really well, is finding Hardy and then you find
the next one instead.
Yeah, find him. Bring him in. Like, bring me the young guy that's just kind of costs nothing. But, and while you're doing that, throw Taysom Hill out there. Have like two different types. Make it a game of choice, you know? Like, and if they choose wrong, they choose wrong. But I like having two different types of guys out there and having two different ways to kind of approach it. Like, have some variety. I don't know if we know enough about this yet.
Right.
Like, we haven't seen it to really have like a steadfast opinion, but I would rather get the ball in, you know, Kamara's hands than kind of anybody on this list, or Taysom's hands more than kind of anybody on this list. And if they aren't going to get hurt and you don't really have to protect them, like, why wouldn't you get the ball into these people's hands? But Shahid is still very, very close to the top of the list.
He's a cheat code compared to the rest of the league. He's the All-Pro and the Pro Bowl selection among return men. I mean, they've got a leg up on everyone because of that. But yeah, the safety factor, I mean, it's just been taken for, you know, accepted as fact. Well, you don't use Alvin Kamara back there. He's too important to the offense. But if these are the kind of touches that aren't like a higher risk of injury, then it becomes a, hey, we can get Kamara 3 more touches in this game. I really hope they wind up following that path. I'm curious how many teams will.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. If it's going to be like an inside run drill, though, like maybe our idea and understanding of like what a returner is could be completely changed too. Like, it's going to be fascinating. I'm excited to see it.
The blocking will become really important. So I hope they have good offensive
There's a whole nation of people that are going to have to come up with a new game plan for their bathroom breaks, because now, like, when someone touches, like, you aren't going to have 7 minutes. You aren't going to have touchdown, commercial break, extra point, commercial break, kickoff, commercial break, play. Like, there's going to be things that happen in there now that matter. So everyone's going to have to get a little bit quicker. But it's going to be fascinating to kind of just see how things shake out. All right, while we're on the subject of special teams, the Saints recently signed a new kicker prospect, Charlie Smith from Northern Ireland, to compete with Blake Groupie. We talked to him earlier today. Some of the highlights out there have been pretty good. I think I seen a 61-yarder somewhere that he kind of nailed.
63 on that video, but he said today he's made him from 66 and 67. So that's just the one that the video keeps going around.
All right, my only thing with him, and we're going to see in camp, there's going to be competition. Every video I've watched, though, like, the ball curves.
Yeah.
Like, that is, man, that would add some heart attack.
He talked about that on the call he said he was using the crosswind in that particular. So what he is he's a Gaelic football goalkeeper, which is not just a soccer goalkeeper. Gaelic football, as he explained it, is like halfway between soccer and rugby. But the kickers, the goalkeepers in there, have a kicking style that is pretty similar to the style. He did not kick in American football ever in his life until last August. And he's been, and that was one of the first ones that we saw. He said he made his first four attempts through the uprights, but then he's been working with a kicking coach ever since. He's got the leg. He needs the refinement. They invited him to the combine. I think, was it he made 12 of 16 at the combine, which is not, you want to do better than 75% in a controlled environment like that. But he was, you know, he makes them from 60 plus, and he's just like kind of brand new at this, but it's really fascinating. And he even talked about how he wrote a letter to the NFL 5 years ago. He sent it to like a generic, like inquiries@NFL.com email address. Like, hey, how can I try out for you guys? Like, he thinks his kicking style matches it. Obviously we just talked about how the Saints find their returners from everywhere. Now they're trying to find their kickers from everywhere. They had the Australian punter. They were the ones who had the Irish punter, Daniel Whelan, in a couple years ago, who later became the Packers punter. I am all for taking a look at it. I mean, consistency is more important than a strong leg, but if he shows both, we just saw Lou Hedley beat out Blake Killigan last summer. I mean, it's a real, you know, if he shows it, he's got a real possibility to do it.
No doubt about it. They're open-minded about that stuff for sure. All right. Moving on to our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of hand-picked barrels, like bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's, so much more than wine. This question comes from Noodles51. Do you think that Zach Strief played a big part in Cesar Ruiz's development, and could that be why Penning, Saldivari haven't come along since he left? And I think, yeah, for sure, Zach's a good coach. He went to Denver for a reason. He was a good coach here. For a reason, they hired him in that role. For a reason, we saw improvement when he was here. I think that he was able to take some of Marone's like gruffness and maybe soften it up a little bit and approach it another way. Not that Zach's like a softy or anything, but like I think it was just kind of maybe that communication was a little more effective there. But look, I'll say this though, like Strief's assignment year one was kind of to be in Penning's pocket. Like they kind of told us that he was in charge of the development and Marone was kind of handling some of the other stuff. He was also kind of in Ruiz's pocket and we saw that development go up. So there are major questions, I think, here about Penning. I think a lot of it has to do with Penning, but I do think that Strief's a great coach and there was a reason that he was here and we saw success in year one or, you know, with Ruiz underneath him.
Yeah, a couple of things here. One thing we've heard about Strief too is that he was involved in some of their play design packages and actually I think pretty heavily involved in some of the Taysom stuff they were doing that was working really well. Coaching matters in all these aspects, and I think he's absolutely missed, and I think coaching is extremely important when it comes to Penning and Saldivari in particular. So I can't say for sure how much Strief would be better for them versus Doug Marone versus the new guys they have now. I know I'm really excited about what John Benton and Rick Dennison are going to do for the schemes that they come up with. I think switching the offensive line coaches after those two guys didn't develop last year can't be overstated. No question about it.
Yeah, I think losing them was definitely a loss for the team, and it's something that they're going to have to hope works better is this coaching and that Penning response to it. That's going to do it for us on today's episode of New Orleans.Football. Make sure you're signed up to the website, NewOrleans.Football/subscribe. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. We're going to have our first mock draft a little bit later this week, so make sure you got an eye out for that. Until then, we'll see you next time.